This is the Thursday morning show. It's time to talk education. Craig Manazzi grew up in Nashwauk and became a school superintendent in Minnesota and Iowa. He's retired in the Coleraine area, and today he's talking about education with us. Craig, welcome back to the studios.
Thanks for having me, Heidi and John.
Are you supposed to say Manazzi? Is there a way you're supposed to say that?
That was good, John. You had that kind of Italian accent to it. Manazzi.
Manazzi.
And no one saw his hand gestures when he did it, too.
Was good. So. You're looking at me.
Well, Craig, I thought we'd start our conversation today talking about something that comes up a lot. I think the legislature was talking about it this year, too. Education and how dealing with success in terms of kids, low-income kids, and poverty, and it's a complicated sort of issue. How do we even start this conversation?
You know, it's interesting, Heidi. I know in the Duluth...
Get closer.
In the Duluth News Tribune, I think a week ago this last Sunday, they had an article about poverty, and they were dealing with excessive absenteeism among kids in poverty and minority children. And, you know, the kids were missing... over a month of school per year. And I have some stories, though, where, I feel like where I've been, we've been able to really have success with kids in poverty. One of our elementary schools in Iowa actually had a free and reduced rate of about 60%. And yet I'm going to give you some reasons as to why, they were able to achieve. And some of our schools were half of that with their free and reduced kids. But I think it all starts with hiring an exceptional instructional staff. I mean, the number one way you can increase student achievement is having a great teacher in front of kids. It seems like something that we all know, but it really is the most important factor to raise student achievement. The second thing is to have a great leader, a great principal, a great leader in that building. And I think you can do some really remarkable things. We had a school, again, with about 60% free and reduced kids, lots and lots of children in poverty, and they were able to achieve at almost the highest level of any of our 8 elementary schools. And those are some of the reasons. And then just also having a teacher in front of kids. There were times in a whole school year, we only missed about 9 days without having a teacher in front of the students. So we had summer programming, we had extended day before school, after school, those kinds of things. And kids were excited. So our kids in poverty actually had extremely high attendance rates because they love coming to school. I always say a great school is where you see the kids run in faster than they leave. They kind of walk and kind of, just move slowly out of the school, but the kids really love to be in that building. So I think it really starts with that, and then making sure that we, have more of a year-round kind of thing so that we're not taking 3 months off in the summertime where there is summer programming, there's programming during vacations and things like that to really help the kids with their language arts and math. One of the comments that I also had, the principal that I had at the school was a man by the name of Joe Nelson. Joe was absolutely a phenomenal guy, took care of so many needs, sent food home with the kids every weekend, had clothing for them, boots, hats, mittens. I mean, he just was so amazing at networking and finding the things so that when the kids did come to school, so many of those basic needs had been met. And I asked Joe this week, I said, Joe, I want to comment in terms of, going on the radio and what do you think? And he said, Craig, you have to attack this problem differently in 2017. Phone calls and form letters if kids aren't coming to school don't work. Leaders need to show up at the homes and to tell the kids they're wanted at school. And I was in Joe's truck and we did go pick up kids, and it wasn't a punitive measure. It was all about, we want you at school, you're wanted, you're needed, things like that. The kids are really cared for. And that seemed to work for us in Iowa and everything too. So we really had an amazing school. And those teachers, they weren't driven by the clock. They were driven by the needs of those kids. And Joe hired an incredible staff, and they got amazing results. And so I think what it does too is that, I have this belief that one of the last pure forms of democracy we have is a great public education. And you have to believe that they took a lot of kids and they've helped a lot of kids become successful in life because they gave them a great education and a great start.
So this conjures some things up for me. And to be honest, there aren't always great principals.
Right.
There aren't always great teachers. Mm-hmm. So how does a school that doesn't maybe say have a lot of great teachers make those changes? And then also, is the education system for people going to school to become teachers, are they learning that these are the type of things that they need to go the extra mile? Or is this extra mile stuff just for special people? Something they have.
Yeah, and I think that's the number one thing that a principal needs to do, John, is I think they need to be able to hire and recruit the very best. When you have an opening to hire a teacher, you have to go at the process thoroughly and make sure that you hire the very best. You have to network with the colleges and universities if you're hiring a new person and make sure that you are getting the very, very best people. So I think that's very, very important, is the ability to hire that exceptional instructional staff. And then when you hire people, you also have to be able to mentor them and make sure that they're mentored by very good people on the staff. And I think Joe was able to do that because new people that came into the school were mentored by very good people. And they knew that this is the way we did things at Mitchellville Elementary. This is the way we do things in terms of instructing kids, professional development, curriculum, all of those things.
You know, you're talking about teachers and they're getting really good teachers. And one of the things going on right now, being talked about in the Minnesota legislature, was about licensure and teachers and kind of creating almost a new way of giving license to people who maybe don't have the formal training of being a teacher, but in the field. But what you're speaking to right now kind of definitely goes against that, because someone may be an expert in a field but may not know all of these other sort of social things a teacher needs to know about their students.
Yeah, and I think getting back to what John said, Heidi, too, I think our colleges and universities are doing a better and better job of preparing teachers now. I think that there's a better connection. There used to be a real disconnect between K-12 and the colleges and universities, but I think they are now preparing students better. I just, this whole piece of legislation about hiring these people as community experts who are not licensed teachers, I think is really, really the wrong way to go. I think that in this day and age, when you need a skill set that goes beyond content knowledge, that it's about, instruction, it's about how to manage the classroom, how to build relationships with students, I don't think this does the profession any good. I think in terms of, we've got to make sure that we provide the training to make sure that teachers are ready to be in the classroom. And just because you have a level of content knowledge, whether it be in language arts or chemistry, or you studied that subject, doesn't translate into being a great teacher in the classroom. So I would be very much against seeing that become a law in terms of just allowing people who are not licensed to just move into the classroom.
And it did not pass, right?
It did not.
Okay.
Overwhelmingly?
I think in that bill so far, from what I understand, Governor Dayton did veto that bill.
Okay.
And so from what I understand, he did veto that.
Are there other states that do that?
You know, I think that
we've all had guest speakers and things like that, but they're talking instruction.
Right. And there are other states that treat a lot of those kinds of things differently. For example, when I had a son who played hockey in Texas for a while, and he was at the time he was 18 or 19 years old, and Texas even allowed anybody who was 18 years old to just go into and be able to substitute teach. And there were no requirements and things like that. So there are different laws and from state to state in terms of licensure and everything. I think the purpose of the law initially was they were trying to take a law and to try to get away from a lot of the red tape in terms of licensure and moving from state to state and things like that. And some of that, I think, makes a lot of sense in terms of if you're teaching in one state and you're trying to get your license in a different state, I think trying to make sure that that goes more smoothly, I think, is a good part of that law. But in terms of having non-licensed people in the classroom, I think that certainly is the wrong way to go.
We're experiencing shortages of students, aren't we?
We are teachers. We are experiencing shortages in terms of some of the the harder to reach areas. In terms of the sciences, special education is a real difficult one to hire for. Family and consumer science, industrial technology, some of those areas there are shortages for teachers right now. Yes.
We're talking with Craig Minazzi today. He's a retired school superintendent. He was in Minnesota and Iowa, and he grew up in the Nashwauk schools. Was there a special teacher you had? I mean, I'm sure you had many if you ended up going into education, but...
You know, I have real fond memories of the people that I had at Nashwauk Kewaunton. I think that was just a great place to grow up, and we had some amazing teachers, and I've spoken fondly about so many of them. I remember a high school English teacher, senior English teacher, his name was Elmo Hagee, and he was great at teaching us how to write. A stickler for spelling and vocabulary and all of those kinds of things. And writing didn't come easily for me. I remember my mother was a journalism major from the 1940s at the University of Minnesota, and going off to college, writing was something that was a challenge. And then as a superintendent, you have to write so often. You're writing for newspapers, you're doing newsletters, things like that. So Mr. Hagee was phenomenal, and there are many, many more that I could mention too.
And you might not have appreciated Mr. Hagee at the time, but as you've grown older and you knew the importance and what the heck, where he was coming from, that's kind of where you probably even, you know, get that passion or love for what he did for you.
Yeah, I remember I was so mad at my mother at the time when I went to Gustavus as an undergrad, and Gustavus was trying to really bolster their academic standing and everything, and they talked about becoming like a Harvard of the Midwest, and I was so mad at her at the time. I said, why am I going to this school that is so difficult? Well, here I am, a strong believer today and all through my career of academics, but as an 18-year-old, you don't appreciate that, John, as much.
What makes a great teacher? Do you have to be brilliant? You don't have to be brilliant.
No. I think a great teacher, I spent a long time as a middle school principal, and I always said, and at the middle school, content is not quite as important maybe as it is as a high school teacher, but it's all about relationships. And if you go through a middle school and you see that the kids are hanging around the adults that they really want to hang around with, those are your very best teachers. I remember when I was in Lakeville, as a principal too in Lakeville, I had a math teacher by the name of Dick Zeman. He was a phenomenal football coach. My boys had him as a coach, but he was a middle school teacher. But the kids would line up at 6:30 in the morning to get math help from Mr. Zeman.
Oh, jeez.
And it was about
goosebumps.
It was about the math help, Jim, but it was more about they wanted to be with Mr. Zeman.
Sure.
That's who kids, and that's the relationships that you build. And so it's all about that. And so I think it's a lot of those kinds of things that we just talked about in terms of licensure, but it's as much about your ability to build relationships and understand the kids that you're working with.
So let's kind of move into how you think schools, school districts should think about the future. You know, so many schools have been consolidated. John talked about shortages. Where do we even start this conversation? But long-range planning, because I know for parents, it's hard to think of their really little ones headed off to a giant school compared to what they might have gone to. But where do we start here?
You know, I think in terms of, and we talked about it the last time too, Heidi, that, you know, I think it's really important that school districts can really share services. And I think through technology and Skype and all of that today, we can do a lot of that. I mean, we can have that phenomenal chemistry teacher 30 miles away, and we can bring that that lesson into a classroom in other areas and everything too. So I think that, you know, today our resources are much more limited, and we are, you know, held accountable and should be to making sure that we're using the resources wisely. But I think that's where long-range planning really comes in. I think you have to have that vision, mission, and core values for every district. And I think that's really, really important, and that student achievement has to be at the forefront of what we do. And so I think those are the kinds of things that I think are really, really important. That's why I'm such a believer in strategic planning and making sure that every district has that strategic plan. They have their initiatives, they have their goals, and that the school board, the administration, the staff, and the community are constantly reviewing what that strategic plan says and resetting it, reassessing it as they go and everything. But in a day and age where resources are limited, we have to make sure that we have that roadmap as to, like Heidi says, what the future looks like and how we're going to get there. And I think sometimes when you don't have that roadmap or you don't have that direction, direction, you go off in all sorts of directions, and some of those directions probably aren't very good unless you have that plan as to where you should be going.
Before we go, I want to kind of throw a question at you. So we have a, on the national level now, the education secretary, is that how the?
Yep.
Betsy
DeVos.
Is a different sort of education uh-huh. secretary than we've had in the past. How much does that leader affect school districts? Or how would she have affected the work that you did as a superintendent?
I think that's a great question. I mean, anytime you have anybody leading, I always used to tell school board members, you know, you're at the top of the food chain, so you have to lead from that direction, so other people see that direction. I think it's huge. I mean, she is the head educational leader in the United States, so I think that position is very big and it's huge. So, you know, all that she does and so forth, her role modeling as an educator, well, she really isn't an educator, you know, I think is mm-hmm. vitally important. So I think we all look to that person to lead, just like in a local organization, we look to the superintendent, we look to the school board to be leaders. So I think that position is huge.
Are you worried?
I am worried. I really am. I remember the night when she was appointed. I think I was text messaging colleagues in Minnesota and Iowa. I was very concerned, and I said, you have to be involved. You have to understand this. This is a huge appointment for our profession and the direction of education in our country. So I am absolutely very worried.
Well, we'd love to have you on again to talk education. We just kind of skimmed the surface again. What might you want to talk about in the future?
You know, I'd like to talk about the American high school. And maybe where we can make some improvements in the American high school and maybe where we're letting kids down. I had some other topics. I would like to talk about the essential characteristics of leaders. I think that would be something to talk about. And also the federal government funding of special education. We okay. touched on special ed a little bit last time, but those would be some other topics I'd love to touch on.
Sounds great. Send us what you think we should talk about in terms of education. You can send us an email, comments@kaxe.org. Craig Minazzi, thanks again for joining us. If you missed the conversation or were just tuning in, you'll be able to catch it on our website, kaxe.org. Coming up, we've got National Native News, and then we're featuring a sculptor from the Park Rapids area on Area Voices.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Canada's investigation into missing and murdered